Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
More of our coverage ahead of September's House of Keys general election with election 2016 candidates interviews. We're now joined in our studio by 53-year-old Amanda Walker, who's announced that she'll be standing in Douglas East. Good afternoon, Amanda. Apologies and welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, and there's no need to apologise. I think at 53, I'm that smashing bit in the middle like a Jaffa cake. I'm not too young, I'm not too old, I'm not going to please everybody. But there's a bit for everyone in there.
Good girl. Where's the Jaffa cakes then? You should have brought them in.
I've used up all the biscuits this morning at results day at QE2.
Good results?
I think the vast majority have massive smiles on their faces and well-deserved smiles on their faces.
Okay, let's see if you can put a smile on some of the faces for people in Douglas East. Introduce yourself, first of all.
Right, I'm Amanda Walker, as has already been said. I live in Douglas East. I've lived there for the past almost 17 years. In a couple of days, it's going to be 17 years. I came to the island to take up a position as citizenship coordinator at Castle Rushen High School. I spent the next 7 years there, and I've spent 8 years at QE2. I absolutely passionately love the Isle of Man, and I want to have the opportunity to serve the people of my home area, Douglas East, and serve on the national government as well.
What made you want to stand for government? Was there a light bulb moment?
No, it's been a long-held ambition. I studied politics at university. I have extremely politically active parents. Politics has been part of my lifeblood for my whole life. It's not been something I saw as a career move from the start. What I think I offer now is a mixture of knowledge of politics, a really deep understanding of things, and life experience, and I'm having a strong career behind me, having done something that I absolutely love, and I think that now is the time for me to actually give people the opportunity to choose me.
Will you miss teaching?
Absolutely, desperately. And I think that's probably one of the areas that I'll maintain a very big interest in, because you know I have a job that I absolutely love. I'm asking people to consider me for a job that I think I love equally and hope I'll do as well.
Will you be critical of the Board of Education?
When required, I think. I think that, you know, that to be blandly and totally in support of anything helps nobody. I think you need critical friends. Obviously, I know the Board of Education has a budget to stick to. There are difficult decisions to be made. And I would hope to bring some balance and some judgment into those decisions.
And also at home, because I think your husband's a nurse.
He
at
is.
Nobles. So presumably sort of the health service gets discussed quite a bit at home over the dinner table.
The health service does get discussed at home. And obviously I'm a health service user as well, as is my husband. My husband has worked at Nobles ever since we came to the island. We made a conscious decision that we wanted to come here. I had a younger sister working in the island, and we knew that he would actually find a job far more easily than me. So I got a teaching post here first, and then my husband over the summer holidays was able to secure a nursing post, and he's been on the medical admissions unit, as was Ward 6, for most of his time on the Isle of Man. He's very recently moved to work on the blood clinic.
With the vote on September the 22nd, mm-hmm. you're hoping to be representing Douglas East.
Yes.
What, as far as you are concerned, are the problems at present with Douglas East?
Right. I think one of the main priorities for people in Douglas East is the actual cosmetics of our area, the situation over the promenade and the number of derelict buildings that we have. But equally, I think people are concerned very much about the economy, which is obviously a national issue, but it impacts on people whichever part of the island they live on. Housing, I think, is also a huge concern. We've got a very, very ethnically and socially diverse catchment in Douglas East. We've got people who live in fabulous, sumptuous accommodation, and we've got people who live in accommodation that's almost Dickensian. And, you know, I think that's something that I would seek to really try to do something about, because I think your house and home is absolutely central to people. It's maybe not a huge vote winner because it doesn't affect a massive percentage of the population, but those whom it does affect, it affects very severely.
So are you thinking that the government will be having problems with finances, and there's this big amount of money that's going to be required for Douglas Prom? How do you see the horse trams, as a for instance,
I think I've been quoted as saying that I take a utilitarian approach to it. What I mean by that is that I think the horse trams need to be retained. They're a part of our important heritage, but not at any cost. I think we have to have a viable scheme that retains the trams, but also makes us have a usable throughput route. It's a main arterial route in Douglas. We can't simply move people up to Onchan, because that route is also heavily clogged. during the peak times. So I think my solution would be to go for a single track with passing points and look at sympathetic landscaping of the areas where there are pinch points along the prom. There are certain places where when the coaches park to disembark their customers, cars simply cannot pass, and that causes logjam and frustration. But that can be designed out. I would be very keen to retain as much parking as possible on the prom, because I think Strand Street is not as attractive as it once was. We're seeing shops closing there. I obviously think the redevelopment of the Strand Centre is going to have an impact, but it might actually be negative initially on the main body of the street. So we want to do everything to encourage shoppers into Douglas, our capital city. It's also the first thing people see when they come off the boat. So you want to make sure that they're getting a golden gateway rather than a rather drab experience. And we don't want them stuck there in the traffic either.
No, that is one of the problems. It's sort of 5:30, isn't it? Yes. 6 o'clock when the boat
discharges. I come in
from
Peel and often come along the prom at peak time to get up to my home, which is just off Derby Road. Mm-hmm. So I hit it badly. My daughter lives in Onchan, so I also try and get the other way. So I know exactly how congested it is. And I know we haven't got millions and millions of pounds, but what we have got is creative people on the island. We've got people with engineering flair. We've got people with architectural flair. I think we can find a much more cost-effective solution. And I think the Manx are resourceful enough to come up with something for that.
Well, as far as you mentioned in the first bit of that chat about empty properties,
yes,
there are an awful lot. You know, yeah. Have you got ideas for Glenmona?
Well, Glenmona, one of the things that I think I've suggested about Glenmona is we have an Isle of Man University Centre. We have no hall of residence, no accommodation for it.
Sorry, I must search Castlemona.
Yeah.
Yes. I fed you yes. into the wrong question.
It's okay. I knew you meant Castlemona. And I see that as something that could, because it was previously hotel accommodation, it would very reasonably I'm sure that there is structural work that possibly needs to be done with the length of time the building's been left vacant, but because it was designed as hotel accommodation, to switch it into ensuite bedrooms so that they could serve the university sector, they could be used for tourism, and they could accommodate our young workers who are seeking that first rung on the housing ladder, can't afford to get into housing because we've got generation rent. The reality is that students are coming back here, or people are not going to university and are wanting independence from home. Parents would possibly like a bit more peace and quiet as well, and they need something that's a transition point, university style accommodation, which I think during the summer we can use for tourism let. It could have multi-purpose use, and just like the universities do across, we get a private enterprise to come in and manage it, and it can be an income generator. It's not something the government would have to invest in long term.
Because Douglas East, I suppose, is rented property, isn't
there's
it?
There's a lot of it. Yes. And of very variable quality, which is why last year we attempted to have some legislation to improve the situation for tenancy and the situation with regard to rent. I think currently you probably have to have more inspection to let your property as tourist accommodation than you do to house young families. And that has to be a travesty. I think we have to be able to do something about that. Because the reality is, for many of our families, hardworking families, in the squeezed middle, who are not in receipt of benefits, are not going to get housing allowance and those sorts of things, are in insecure, inappropriate accommodation. Problems with things like damp, ill-fitting windows, all those sorts of things.
Which also don't make the properties look very attractive, do they, as well?
No. Yes.
Possibly planning might help on a little bit on that side.
Yes. And again, with planning has got to be, we've got to realise that people are trying to make money out of their rented accommodation, but they've invested in it, so they obviously want to maintain it. And if we can make basic standards, it's going to bring those less responsible landlords into line with the many, many responsible landlords, so that we've got a good standard, because I think the reality is, for many people, rental's not short-term. It's long term now. And obviously, we do have a lack of public sector housing as well. So, you know, I think we've got to try and raise the game of the private sector up to the standard that's already exemplified by the good landlords.
As far as the public sector is concerned, mm-hmm. do you envisage bringing in means testing?
I think it's a very thorny issue. I think there are some people who are very frustrated when they're on the housing list and they see people in public sector accommodation who've clearly got a significant amount of disposable income and wonder whether they might want to get onto the housing ladder themselves. We don't currently allow people to buy the public sector housing on the island. I think that's possibly something that needs to be looked at, because that money could then be reinvested. And I think there's some really exciting things happening in public sector housing on the island. The passive house in the south of the island, the environmental programmes there. I think that's absolutely fabulous, and that's going to be something that will give us long-term investment. And again, having our building workers working on infrastructure, keeping them employed, that helps to boost the economy. And I think for a lot of people, their housing is a big concern, even if they're owner-occupied, because they're frightened. There's an awful lot of fear of, if the economy goes badly, will our house prices go down? Will we be stuck in negative equity? So we have to find a solution that, back to my utilitarianism again, that has something for everybody in it, that's going to protect those people who've invested in property, is going to give people aspiration, and is going to give people something, you know, a place to call their own, where they can lay their head without fearing that they could be out next week.
As far as the open spaces are concerned, we're specifically mentioning Douglas there. You've got Lord Street, which has been empty for a long while. You've got Summerland, which seems to have been empty for ages. How would you sort of try and invigorate those areas?
With Summerland, I think that's a very, very difficult site, because obviously, logistically, it's quite difficult right at the end of the prom. I think having a look at the weather attrition that it receives as well, in the winter months in particular, that's another aspect of it. I think with the idea of using it for outdoor pursuits and things like that, we already have Ardwallon and the Venture Centre and Ape Man and all of those things. And we've got the NSC in Douglas. For most of the year, we've got a population of under 80,000 people. So I don't think a big family-based leisure centre is the solution to it. But I do think possibly housing might be a solution to it. And again, I think that's somewhere where we could actually look at a really innovative eco project there, having something like the pods that we have for TT, something like that, that could possibly be used rather like Airbnb, that sort of idea. And again, I wouldn't want the government to invest in that. I'd want the government to open it up to private enterprise. So it has to be something that can be a higher volume, that can be used by the people here, but can also be used to develop tourism and things like people who are here for short-term contracts. Because with many of our companies, they have people who are over here for training purposes, because with companies in the finance sector in particular, they may have subsidiaries in places like India, and they need places for people to stay.
Do you think that inward investment will be available to government?
I think that the way we get inward investment is by having confidence. And I think we've got an absolutely fabulous product here in the Isle of Man. I've said about the quality of life here. And I do think that, you know, we've got an awful lot of unique selling points. Yes, it's difficult and expensive to get here. But once you've got here, like me, you'll want to stay here. You know, I don't leave the island very often, even though I have the pull of my family across. I've got my family here as well, my sort of spiritual family that I have in the Isle of Man. But, you know, I think, yes, if it's approached in the right way, if it's marketed positively, if people can see the benefits, and we do have many skill sets here. The University Centre is developing skill sets, and I'd love to see the University Centre developing more partnerships with particularly some of the universities in the potential Northern Powerhouse, so places like Liverpool John Moores, which I had the privilege of visiting with a party of teachers from the island, to have a look at the huge investment that's going on there, which we probably couldn't match, but we could partner with. And there are elements of their courses that we could help to deliver here as well.
So how do and where do you stand on students' fees?
Well, as the mother of a child who went through university with her fees entirely paid, and as a person who got an entirely free university education, number two daughter is off to Nottingham University in September.
Hooray!
Having taken a 2-year gap so that she could get some money behind her, because she didn't want to put our family under financial strain. So she's taken that objective role herself. I think it's a big concern. I think that there are students for whom finance is becoming the consideration rather than whether university is the right place for them. And I think that's a backward step. The Chief Minister mentioned the idea of trying to attract some of our graduates back by waiving their fees if they come back to the island. I think I'd take a step further, and I'd actually golden handcuff some of our graduates to the island and say, you know, we'll waive your fees, we'll actually pay your fees if you come back and work for a specified period. That couldn't be universal. It would have to be in areas where we'd got skill shortage and for people who were going to be able to contribute to the economy. So perhaps looking at allied scholarships, and I know some of our island companies already offer scholarship programmes to support students through universities, just like the military do, and they expect something back in return, which I think is fair enough. But I think for students going to university now, it's a big consideration, because they're going to come back with their debt from paying their fees and from their accommodation costs. They're then going to be trying to get onto the housing ladder, and even to get a deposit deposit down for a flat with the amount of debt that they're saddled with is very difficult. So yeah, I think it is something that really seriously and objectively needs looking at. I'm not an absolute idealist. I know we haven't got an endless dream list that we can tick everything off. But it doesn't mean we don't try. It doesn't mean we don't have a look at it and we don't have a serious conversation about it.
You mentioned the Chief Minister. Mm-hmm. How do you see any alterations in the election of the Chief Minister?
Well, the Lord Lisvain report obviously recommends some changes. I don't think changes can be made overnight. I think we obviously have to digest what he's said. We're going to have a new team in September, and I think that new team is going to need to digest the report that's been commissioned by a very eminent person. It will also have to look at the opinions of people coming into Tynwald, and it will have to look at public opinion as well. I've deliberately shied away from Facebook and social media on my campaign platform. As a teacher, I spend a huge amount of time dealing with the negative feedback from it. If I were elected, I would, of course, use those platforms, because at that point, I'd be able to get ICT support to make sure that I had the relevant filters. I'm very, very wary of Facebook, because I think what you very often get is the knee-jerk response of people, the extremist view, and then that gets seen as public opinion, which I think is a large part of the story for Brexit. I think things were spun, and I think a very distorted vision of reality came because people thought it's on Facebook, it must be the truth. So I think Facebook is powerful for sharing your personal information and finding out the best restaurant and all that sort of thing. I think it has limitations for politics.
You mentioned Brexit. Did you agree with the Brexit vote?
I absolutely didn't, but I absolutely accept the judgment of the people. And I think we have to seize it and go forward and try and take the positive out of it. You know, we've got to put the people first. And the people said, by a fairly slim majority, but the people did say that they wanted out. Our people didn't, because we didn't have a say in it, and we're not actually in it in the same way. But I think it could be a tremendous opportunity for the Isle of Man. And rather than lamenting what happened, I think we have to look forward and see what we can grasp and what we can gain from this. So we have to see it as an opportunity rather than a threat.
As far as September the 22 is concerned, please take a drink. We have this election. We have all the local elections around the whole of the island. Mm-hmm. Explain a national list.
Right. I think that what we end up with very often is we have 24 MHKs who are selected on a local basis. And many people's perception is that they'll actually be rather like a council rather than being forming the national government. I think if we move to a national list of the candidates for the whole island, that would actually be people being aware of what they were voting for to form the national government. And it may well be, I've had lots of people who've said to me, oh, I wish I lived in Douglas East because I'd vote for you, because they know me and know that, you know, I am dead straight and that I will put the people first, but they can't. Whereas if we had a national list and went for something like a proportional representation model, it's the way things are done in countries like Italy, I think that that would actually be a more genuine democracy, rather than very often finding that you're in a tiny, weeny constituency of 4,500 people, which is far smaller than anything that votes for an MP across. And you may actually find that on the sheet, although there are 5, 6, 7 candidates, there isn't actually two that you want to vote for. Whereas in the neighbouring constituency, there's actually 3 you'd quite like to vote for.
So we have a national list of, and still with 24 MHKs?
I'm not sure that we need 24. And I think if we went for it, I'm not sure that we need to drop it down hugely, because I'm not sure that we need every single MHK to be a ministerial appointment. I think we need an awful lot of people on the back bench to act as a check and balance on the ministers as well, to question and challenge what's happening in the departments positively and productively. And I'm very much in favour of having checks and balances. Precisely the number of MHKs, I think, is something that would be part of this review and the way that it was done. And the national list is just an idea. I'm wedded and glued to that idea. It's just something that I think might actually give us a more truly representative democracy. I know some people have thought about, Phil Gawn, for example, held a series of meetings about having direct, sort of interactive democracy. I don't think we're quite there yet, because I think there's an awful lot of people who are not comfortable with that platform. And there wasn't a huge number of people turned up for the meeting. So that suggests to me that, you know, that we're not quite there yet. But obviously things develop really, really fast in the modern world. And, you know, I think we have to look at all of the options, be open minded, but we do have to make decisions. We don't spend all the time talking. We actually have to make some action.
So having said that statement, I'm assuming you think that government could work a bit quicker.
quicker, but not too quick. I'm in favour of having time to reflect and to review. I'm a historian by training as well. My degree is history and political science. So I think you have to assess the evidence, evaluate, analyse, and then act. And when you act, you've got to look at the impact, the purpose and the need. And you've got to make sure that you're doing something that is going to do far more good than harm and is going to impact positively on our community, both the community of East Douglas and the whole community of the island and our place in the world as well. I think we punch way above our weight, which is why I think we should have confidence.
You seem to want a different role for the Lord Bishop in politics.
Yes, I'm concerned about the continuation of the Lord Bishop having the role that he currently has, because I don't think that's truly representative of the island. I'm an active Christian myself, but I equally recognise that there are many people of no faith, of other faiths, and to have somebody who represents one strand of what is possibly a minority religion on the island now may not be legitimate in the 21st century. I think possibly when Tynwald was set up, the role of the bishop was far more powerful politically than it really is today.
But you'd rather see more women in there as well.
I definitely rather see more women, and I'd rather see more young people like young Carlos that you had in previously. At 53, I can call 27 young. I think what the Tynwald needs to be far more reflective of the island as a whole. And obviously, the island as a whole is actually slightly more women than men from the most recent census. And whatever number of women end up there, at the moment, there are definitely too few. And the current Tynwald is too male. The reason I'm standing for East Douglas is not just because I live there. At the moment, although there are seven candidates, there's only one other woman. So if I didn't stand, people wouldn't actually have a choice. If I think they've got to vote for a woman, they've only got one choice. At the moment, they could vote for both of us, the way I've put it, but they've certainly got a choice of woman. And I think that's important. They've got, five boys and a girl until I stood for the position. And I didn't stand at the last minute. I had been planning this for a very long time. I just left it because I have a very difficult and demanding full-time job, and I gave myself a couple of weeks summer break before I threw my hat into this bear pit.
What are the first challenges that you would like to challenge if indeed you are elected in Douglas East?
I think that the obvious things that we've got to do straight away is have a look at things like the public sector pensions and pensions as a whole. It's a massively, massively complicated and very, very complex issue. I think that there has been a lot of negotiation already. We're not all privy to what that negotiation has been in the public sphere. The unions have been very, very actively involved and have plied the case of the various different interest groups, because even within a profession, there are people who are at different stages of their career. People like myself, when I came into teaching, everybody retired at 50 because there was a huge pool of graduates trying to get jobs. Obviously, that's not feasible anymore. I'm not so sure that I would like my grandson taught by a 74-year-old teacher in secondary school. We do have defibrillators in all of the secondary schools now, but I wouldn't like them called into active use. So we've got to find a solution that doesn't betray those people who bought into a scheme that they expected to receive certain benefits from. But equally, if it's unsustainable, we have to make tough decisions, and they may not be popular, and I'm prepared to make unpopular decisions if I think it's for the greatest good of everybody.
And that's draw a line under it somewhere.
Not necessarily. It's assess what the actual situation is, which currently I'm not privy to. So it's look at the figures, it's take advice from industry professionals, and we have plenty of those on the island, because obviously there's a big pensions and insurance sector on the island. Take best advice and make informed decisions that are balanced and that are just. I don't think it's about setting generation against generation. The older generation are reliant on the younger generation buying into an ongoing pension, because otherwise it's not going to be sustainable. If we make something that is so negative, it's going to people will lose confidence in the pension structure as a whole, and we certainly don't want that. I think we need to have people paying in for and securing their future.
OK, you've got a minute to tell me why I should vote for you.
Well, you should vote for me because I'm going to put the people first. I'll put the people of East Douglas first. I'll put the people of the island first. I won't be afraid to be controversial. So I'm a bit like Peter Caron in that way. I will stand up and be prepared to be counted. But what I'll also do is bring balance. I recently read a really fantastic novel in which the people of a small, isolated community were told by outside consultants that their green tea was the thing to go for. They went for it like mad. They paid two expensive American consultants. 10 years down the line, they were still designing the packaging and they'd got no food.
Yeah, I don't think green tea is not going to be a problem.
No,
here,
but
is
I mean,
it?
it's this thing of putting all of our eggs in one basket. We've got to be diverse. We've got to be attractive. We've got to look at the big picture. We can zone in on specifics and we can try to develop our niche markets for things like tourism, for example. But we equally got to be aware of making the island work day to day for the people who are already here, not just trying to attract new people in, but raising and enhancing and continuing the quality of life that we enjoy. And I do enjoy it here. I absolutely love this place, which is why I want to represent it and be a part of its future.
My guest has been candidate for East Douglas East. That's Amanda Walker. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys general election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.